Penguin Random House Audio presents Never Give Up, A Prairie Family's Story by Tom Brokaw. Read for you by Lincoln Hope. To Red and Jean Brokaw, and Meredith, always. Preface. From the beginning, America has occupied a unique place in the long history of political and cultural challenges to survival. From the Revolutionary War of 1776 through the Civil War, World War I, World War II, the greatest conflict in human history, and devastating economic and viral assaults, including the flu epidemic of 1918, the lifespan of this unique nation has depended on more than just armies and navies. It has depended on shared values prevailing against assaults on common destinies. Now, in the 21st century, the unexpected and devastating presence of a sinister biological agent that has killed people, roiled the economy, and deeply divided common cause has done unprecedented damage to this precious nation. Simultaneously and unexpectedly, a new conflict broke out with an old adversary. Russia and its tyrannical leader attacked one of Europe's new democracies. In these chaotic times, what can we learn from history? As a citizen, husband, father, and grandfather, I have drawn on the lessons I absorbed of the struggles of the Great Depression, a great war, and the emergence of financial security from my working-class family. My parents' generation was grateful for new opportunities, but they never took the better times for granted. In their roles as parents and citizens, the later experiences of Vietnam and social and racial upheaval also imprinted in them fiscal and personal caution. I never heard them complain about what fate had delivered to them as they made their way through hard times and the limited social programs available until the Great Society took hold. The most enduring lesson I learned from them? Never give up. Part 1. Chapter 1. Bristol, South Dakota. In the late 19th century, in the Great Plains of Middle America, the American Savannah, the land rush was on. It was a vast swath of real estate that was low on water and rich in challenges, from brutal winter seasons to scorching summers. Until recently, it had been the home of enormous herds of antelope and American bison, the magnificent beast prized for its rich pelts and thick cuts of red meat. After the Civil War, and during the great migration of immigrants from Northern Europe and Scandinavia to America, that part of the United States was also prized for two irresistible qualities. Land was dirt cheap, or free, and there was lots of it. America's flourishing railroad industry saw fresh opportunity for new business, so it pushed into that harsh but promising prairie. My great-grandfather, R.P. Brokaw, left his upstate New York home after the Civil War and headed west seeking security as a farmer or innkeeper. The Brokaws were Huguenots, enterprising Protestants who had fled France and taken up residence in Holland before coming to America, where many flourished in New York and New Jersey real estate, the arts, and civic affairs. But R.P. Brokaw took another route, not nearly as rewarding. R.P. went north, into the New York wilderness, where he opened a small market in the Finger Lakes region. He was a quartermaster and clerk for the North in the Civil War, emerging with a modest pension to finance his trip to the new territories in the American West. He rode the rails and farmed along the way until he reached what was to become the state of South Dakota. Founders of the Milwaukee Road Railroad saw opportunity in the eagerness of the new immigrants to take advantage of land bargains. RP stopped in a new village of wooden shanties and primitive homes because it had a promising feature: a rail line north and south, and one east and west. A Milwaukee Road Railroad developer had given these new villages British city names, and this one was called Bristol. RP decided it needed overnight accommodations. He started with a tented commissary and then began constructing the first substantial building in town and called it the Brokaw House. RP, his son William, and his daughter-in-law Elizabeth ran the Brokaw House as a hotel, boarding house, and center of civic activity. By 1889, South Dakota, with statehood, began to attract more settlers, but it remained a frontier. William would meet incoming Milwaukee Road trains as they arrived on that stretch of the prairie. He would greet the passengers with a pitch for Elizabeth's home cooking at the hotel, saying, "If you don't get enough to eat, it won't cost you a dime." The Brokaw House was famous for its dining room, which featured laced tablecloths and an elaborate Sunday menu of oyster stew, roast turkey, duck, roast beef, lamb, tongue salad, mashed potatoes, suet pudding, apple mince, custard and blueberry pies, ice cream, and assorted cakes, all prepared by Elizabeth in a kitchen with an enormous wood-burning stove, while her ingredients were kept fresh by great blocks of ice packed in wood shavings in an ice house. Somewhere along the way, a Roman Catholic priest converted Elizabeth, and she became a devout Catholic, rejecting the Huguenot connection. 9 of her children followed suit, and to this day, my cousins, aunts, and uncles on that side of the family are devout Catholics. In the fall of 1912, William and Elizabeth were expecting their 10th child. That was my father, and somehow the Catholic priest missed him in the conversion crusade. That's where this Brokaw Prairie saga really begins. Chapter 2. Anthony Orville Brokaw. Read. On October 12, 1912, Elizabeth delivered a husky boy, more than 12 pounds, the carrot top that would be so much a part of his identity already showing. This latest addition to the Brokaw family would soon shed his baptismal name and become known first as Snooks, after a newspaper cartoon character, and then, for most of his life, as Red. Red came into the world as American politics was in turmoil. He was born during the presidency of William Howard Taft, a portly Ohio Republican who had the blessing of the outgoing president, the rambunctious Theodore Teddy Roosevelt. Roosevelt, ever the contrarian, soon became unhappy with Taft and split from the Republican Party that had elected him president. Instead, T.R. ran as the nominee of his own invention, the Bull Moose Party. Woodrow Wilson, a scholar and former president of Princeton University, was the Democratic nominee, and when T.R. divided his own party, it opened the door for Wilson to be elected. Wilson had an ambitious platform of reform, including tariff, banking, and business changes that would diminish the power of Wall Street and big money interests. However, his international ambitions and his deteriorating health, which his wife was determined to keep secret, in his second term, seriously damaged his place in history. In 1912, South Dakota went for Teddy Roosevelt, the Bull Moose. Later, another aristocratic Roosevelt, Franklin, a Democrat, won favor in South Dakota as the populist who led the country through the early days of the devastating Great Depression. Through all that turmoil, national politics were not high on the agenda of the Brokaw family. Every day in Bristol was a struggle. From the beginning, Red had a difficult life. His siblings treated him as their errand boy, assigning him the junkyard chores in the hotel, which was always in need of brute labor. He also had what is now called a learning
sample complete. Ready to continue?